I wasn't making a bigger thing yet of the result of the Eagles game last night. It's a holiday season. We're only, an hour into the show. I don't want to lose Kyle, early in the show. He hasn't been feeling well. There is plenty of time to discuss all this. So that's why I feel like
Kyle's a professional, Whitey.
You know why Whitey hasn't brought it up, guys? And kudos him.
Shouts out to you.
He's earning my respect right now.
Salute to you, Whitey.
Because he knows as well as I do, regular season doesn't matter. Like, if you're playing for championships, whoop the freaking do. You're 11-3 in the regular season. I mean, come on. Like, we're about winning championships in Philadelphia. So, when we're up, we don't have to talk trash.
I got you.
We let our talking happen in January, Jay.
How many championships are you talking about since you guys been talking about championships so long?
I'm all about the most recent one.
Oh, okay.
I'm all about, I'm checking on it. I'm not going back to when I was in diapers, last time you guys won.
I wasn't in diapers. I was running around playing football right along with them.
Dude, think about it. The NFL has changed three times, basically, since the Niners last won. It used to be a running league. Then you had, the introduction of the mobile quarterbacks.
I got you.
And now, the NFL is, there's different rules now and everything.
Fair enough, but here's the thing. Think about this.
Hold up, Whitey.
Yeah, we'll go
my
back to what you said.
My final point.
See, Whitey, this is why I said you shouldn't have let them off the hook.
Niners fans. Fox as a network was in its infancy the last time the Niners won the Super Bowl. Remember, Fox was only 6-7 years old at the time. Fox the network. Think about that.
I don't think that's true. When did Fox start?
I'll look it up right now.
When did Fox start?
Fox just celebrated its 40th year right just now or something like that. Fox network.
So if
beginning.
Yeah. So they started in 40 years ago.
86.
Okay.
So the first decade of Fox. Fox is now of almost 40 years old.
Yeah.
Think about that.
And y'all got 1 in 40.
It doesn't matter.
We're about winning championships.
Right. That's just where's the S at?
The Eagles are about winning championship.
Right.
That's,
just where's the S? That's what I was looking for.
You don't get to add the S yet.
How about
76ers ain't won since I've been alive. I mean, what? He said Philly. Philly is the championship city. I'm waiting on the 76ers have won in 60 years. The Eagles got one in forever. When are we going back to the Flyers?
My Philly's in the mix.
Yeah, Philly's in there. Y'all got 2011, 10, somewhere around there.
Yeah,
2009,
yeah.
J-Row and them. I like J-Row and Ryan Howard.
Right.
Okay.
The Eagles are all about winning championship.
Chip. All right, you got me there. But like I said.
The Niners want to win the championship too, Drapes. They do.
I know. You want to be what the Eagles are. You want to be what the Eagles have been over the last decade.
Who is
Eagles
that? The Niners?
We've been a model franchise over the last 7-8 years.
So has the boys out of Santa Clara.
Yeah.
They've been to 3 Super Bowls.
Jay, you've been quiet all day.
Because I'm just letting you live. I heard the tone in your voice. Look, this is a King station first, so I'm going to go ahead and let the Kings ride.
Right,
but as soon as we get to talking about Philly, which was last segment, your boy is uncommitted now. Your defense is terrible. Slay, now I'm hearing about all Slay and Bradbury's turnstiles.
Yeah.
Slay's not even on the field no more right now.
My honest opinion, Jay, how do you feel about this? My honest opinion is the Eagles will be lucky to get another shot at the 49ers.
I agree.
I think you guys are in trouble.
No, not at all, Jay.
Okay.
Who's beating us?
Just me. I'm just saying.
Who's beating us?
Everybody they play.
Who's beating us outside
of Philly?
The Niners?
And see, I think if you have to go on, if you hit that 5th seed, you're already on the road. So you're going to have to play two.
I'm not worried about anybody.
You go
else.
In 3 games in I'm, a row I'm, on the road?
Why not?
Okay.
They're just not why playing not? Well right now. They just lost.
They're
to
just
Seattle.
Not playing well right yeah. now. And that's a historically you said it. That's a tough Pete Carroll owns us for some reason.
That's true.
He owns us. And here's the thing. When you look at the NFC, and I'm being straight up right now. It's not a homer take or anything like that. Outside of the Niners and maybe having to go on the road to play Dallas.
Which you may see first round.
But I'm not worried about going to Detroit.
You should
I'm
be.
Not worried about that. Come on, Jay.
You don't think Dan Campbell biting on the kneecaps and not worried about that?
Dan Campbell ain't ready for this, man. Okay. Detroit, he ain't ready for prime time. He ain't ready for the big stage.
There's only like four real teams in the NFC, and Detroit's one of them. And they're at the bottom, but
they can score, though.
Yeah, they could. Yeah.
They can get into a shootout with you guys.
Yeah. But hold on.
Look, if you finish fifth, Niners get the bye. We'll just, you know, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. Depending on what Dallas does, I think Dallas is going to lose another game within the next three.
So you think Dallas won't be the 2 seed?
I think they're going to be the 3 seed.
3 seed.
Which would put you guys right there playing them, right? Or no, you would play four.
Yeah, we
so
play
you'd
four.
So you'd be a NFC South.
Man,
yeah,
right.
Y'all got
Come
that.
On
yeah.
now, Jay.
I give you that. That's
exactly.
one. That's one.
One.
Baker
That's
Mayfield
one.
Back
and then we
got to
go
touchdown
again.
Then you would go to Dallas.
Oh, yeah. Do they re?
Then No. You just take the bottom.
Oh, yeah, the bottom.
Yeah, you would take the bottom.
The bottom.
So you'd probably see Dallas.
Exactly.
Yeah, Dallas.
Come on.
Or, yeah.
And then we go to San Fran, and then we go to Vegas. We are.
Ain't gonna be no partying in Vegas, brother. Ain't no F1 for y'all, brother. You forget about that. Now, you may be there because we may send people this show there.
There you go.
But as far as Philly, they probably won't be there.
Dude, if Philly is there,
oof.
I'm going to be... You're not going to be able to deal with me.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to be obnoxious. I'm going to be annoying. Because if Philly's there, that means you know who ain't there.
That's right. You're supposed to be.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
And vice versa.
Either way, you're going to be obnoxious and annoying. Either way, no matter
but
whether they're in it or not.
This is what I'm learning, though. And you know, I'm still new at this radio thing. You know, it's only been a few months. Niners fans, when they're down during that 3-game losing streak, they were quiet. They were quiet as a church mouse.
Nah.
Eagles fans, we still sticking our chest out. We're
really?
Still proud to be an Eagles fan. We don't run in the corner and hide. No. It's still early. Now, at the end of the day, when the season's over and the playoffs are over and then Eagles get, you know, knocked out, okay. But right now, there's still a lot of football left to be played, man. We're not scared. We're good.
Yeah. I'm just telling you, that's my honest opinion. But a lot of pizza left in the box. It should be fun. I'm sure glad the 49ers are probably going to have home field. I'm glad they don't have to go back to Philly. You would think.
Real quick. This is what I meant by Fox, too, real quick.
Yeah.
They won the NFL rights in 1993. Fox became the NFC, home of the NFC in 1993.
Oh, okay.
So that's exactly what I
All
meant.
All right, yeah. And then it was like, yeah, because
94, 95 championship.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. All right. Last night after the game, we had De'Aaron Fox talking about Domas and why nobody appreciates him. And De'Aaron Fox has had enough.
I mean, everything they does for us with just being able to grab a rebound and push it, or even sometimes we grab a rebound and we're able to outlet it to him. There aren't many people that have ever been able to do that at that size. And obviously, he's such a focal point of our offense. Rather, if it's he has the ball, or if he's screening and they don't want to switch onto him, there are just so many things that he does for us. And then defensively, he's been better for us this year. And I mean, what he does on the glass, offensively and defensively, there's just so much that he does on the court that I feel like doesn't get appreciated enough, or people don't realize it. I don't know how you don't realize it, but maybe it's just people don't appreciate what he does enough.
One reason a lot of people don't appreciate it is because I'm talking about people in the media, national media.
Mm-hmm.
So many people were so wrong about that trade that they don't want to admit they were wrong. And it's hard for them to admit that they were so wrong. So they're still looking for reasons to say, yeah, Sabonis does this, but I think they're still having a hard time coming to terms with how wrong they were about the trade in the first place.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it was Matt George who tweeted out Kevin O'Connor has mentioned Domantas Sabonis once this season.
Mm.
He's been quiet on Domas because Domas is letting this play do the talking. And what he does, first of all, Domantas Sabonis fills the stat sheet. We understand that. We get it. If you want to look at the box score and judge Domas, you could do that because he's that dude. But I'm talking about the intangibles that he brings, the way he plays, how hard he plays. That's sort of contagious. And I go back to what I told Chris Miller of the Wizards Network yesterday. The Kings' improvement can be directly traced back to that trade. Without that trade,
no question,
we don't get to where we are right now. And so Domantas Sabonis, as far as I'm concerned, Sacramento, I don't care what he does ever again. This dude helped change the fortunes of this franchise And he should be remembered for that and celebrated for that instead of scoreboard, you know, box score watching when he doesn't play well or anything like that. Without that dude, Sacramento is still, we're Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
We're Washington right now. Without Domantas Sabonis, sure, you got a good player in De'Aaron Fox, but you're not winning any games. With Domantas Sabonis, he has raised the level of the franchise.
I'm glad you pointed out how hard he plays. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago I was talking to a guy who covers the NBA, and we were talking about players that play hard, and he said, all the guys play hard. But, you know, there are some guys that play harder. Bobby Jackson right. comes to mind.
Yeah.
Bobby Jackson always played so hard. Sabonis is a guy that I know in the future when I'm thinking of who are the guys that always played hard every night. He plays as hard as anyone, night to night, as anyone I've ever seen in the NBA. And it sets the tone for the team, as you said. You've got that guy playing that hard night to night, and how can you, if you're a lesser player, give less than the effort he's giving?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'll make an analogy. You know, a lot of times you hear players say they are playing hard, but with Domas, you can feel it. You can see it. And I tell my daughter all the time, you know, eventually she's 11. Eventually, when you marry someone, make sure you can feel the love. Not just say, I love you. Make sure you feel it. Same thing with playing hard. Don't just say you play hard. Let us feel it. Let us come away from the game thinking, man, that dude laid it all on the line. And that's what we see from Domas night in and night out.
Yeah, it's not something everyone can do. There are a lot of young players that have come through the NBA. There's some in the league right now who honestly think they're playing hard. And you compare them to somebody like Domas, like, you're not. You think you are, but you're
right,
not.
You're not.
And there's no question that he's given everything he's got.
And to do it at his size and the beating that he takes and the physicality mm-hmm. and the bumping and banging and bruising. I mean, this dude is laying it on the line every single night. And he's doing it not against 160-pound guys, 180. He's doing it against 260, 270, 280-pound guys night in and night out.
I'll tell you where I think I was wrong about him. Initially, okay. I was wrong about the trade. I really wasn't. I thought he's a nice player, but stills, you know, and obviously it's worked out great. So I was wrong about that. But I also think he is proving this year he's never going to be all-league defense, but he is a better defender than I thought he was.
In what way? Clarify that, because
he's a lot more active. Obviously, against certain bigs, he gets overpowered. And obviously, you know, you go back to Looney mm-hmm. last year in the playoffs. You know, a certain guy, he's not the greatest leaper. He's not especially quick, but he's smart, and he does a really good job switching and helping out, you know, coming off screens.
Right. So maybe not on-ball defender guarding his man, but sort of like the free
team
safety,
defender.
Team defender,
yeah.
quarterback
yes.
in
yeah.
the backfield there, uh-huh. you know, the Mike linebacker or something like that.
Now. I thought he was terrible, yeah. and I don't think he's a dreadful defender.
No, not at all. In terms of positioning, uh-huh. knowing where to be, that kind of thing, yes. You know, he may not block shots or any rim
no.
protect or anything like that, but for the most part, he's in good position out there. He's communicating out
and
there.
And he just like everything yeah. else, he plays really hard on defense.
Yes. Exactly. And so I just wanted to give some love to him. And I'm glad De'Aaron Fox spoke about it. Mike Brown talked about him as well. I mean, that dude last night, he put in some work. It was bully ball on display last night.
Yeah. He has fun with it, too. You can see.
Yeah.
He enjoys it.
He was
it.
Smiling last night, right?
Yeah.
Some of them plays. Oh, my God.
Kings are cruising, but Christmas vacation is over. Right back with that. Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports. On the YouTube chat here. See, people still want to talk about football. It's interesting.
Do they?
Didn't Drapes always say, come talk to me in December? Well, here we are, bro. That's from Justin Wise. Yeah.
But here,
damn, they're January.
You know what, though? Can I get some props, Jay, Simone, Kevin? I'm facing the music. Your boy ain't ducking the smoke. When we win, I'm here. When we lose, I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean, I ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm not quitting. I'm not rolling over or anything. Niners fans ain't going to chase me off the job.
With strep throat? You did that last week.
I was really sick then.
I know you were.
I was really sick. I was really sick.
Still to be determined. I've yet to see results.
You need to test results?
Yeah, we're going to need to see
that. Right.
But I'm here. Your boy is facing the music.
Keep that energy in January.
And same thing from Niners fans. If y'all lose in January, don't go crawling under a rock.
No. Well, these ones here, we're not.
I'm dishing out.
I can't speak for everybody else, Drapes.
You got to take what I'm dishing out, big fella.
Straight up.
True? All right, deal?
Absolutely.
All right, okay. We both agree on
it. Don't run it around here.
Yep. All right, that's good.
Walking like the mailman right into the, to the studio.
Head held up high, huh?
We got to talk about this upcoming stretch for the Kings and Brendan's coming in. And then, you know, at some point we got to talk about and hear what your quarterback had to say last night. And that's not your responsibility, but it is an indication that, wow, things aren't especially going swimmingly in the Eagles locker room right now. So
we're not going to talk about that right now, are we?
Not right now.
Okay, all right, because I got something on that.
All right, yeah, but we do have that coming up. As we said, the Kings right now getting ready for three games against what? We got Boston tomorrow, then you got the Suns, then you got Minnesota. Those three teams are combined on the road this year, 22-13. That's on the road combined. I think Phoenix actually has, they may have, well, they have a really good road record. And so do the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, Phoenix on the road. I got it right here. On the road, 7-4 this season. Celtics 6-5.
Right,
though.
Right.
Yeah, Celtics the one that's struggling. Minnesota 9-4 away from home. Wow, that's impressive.
I will say a lot of the people like Kevin O'Connor and Hollinger and those people, a lot of those people were very high on Minnesota before the season started.
Were they really?
Some of them were, and I was not, and here we are. Everybody's looking up at Minnesota right now.
So. Hey, give them credit, man. They figured it out. You know, we didn't think the Towns-Gobert pairing would work. Rudy Gobert is looking like Rudy Gobert from Utah right now, the way he's playing defense, and Towns a stretch big, and Anthony Edwards, you know, an all-star, all-NBA kind of guy, and Mike Conley running the show. I mean, Minnesota's legit. They're a force to be reckoned with. Now, mind you, we went in their crib and handed them their first home loss of the season. They had won 7 straight at home, and Sacramento went in there and smacked them up. And so this will be a tough week. And, you know, let's start with Boston. You know, historically, the Celtics are a bad matchup. We talk about the Pelicans, the Clippers. The Celtics are that team, too. Size and length. You know, you got Porzingis. You know, we'll see if he plays tomorrow. Jason Tatum is a monster. Jalen Brown. Like, and I did a podcast with somebody in Boston this morning, and I said this about Jalen Brown and Jason Tatum. They play, you feel them every time you go against them. And those are the teams that we historically have had trouble against. The physical teams, the relentless teams. That's what the Celtics are. They keep coming at you. And so there's not the Wizards we're facing tomorrow. This isn't Utah. Like, these guys know who they are. They got upper echelon star power. Think about it. Jason Tatum, first team All-NBA. Jaylen Brown, second team All-NBA. Kristaps Porzingis, you know, the unicorn, averaged 23 a game last season. So this is going to be and they got Drew Holiday. Jeez.
And I love
it. I totally forgot about Drew Holiday. Think about this. The Celtics added Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis this offseason. And all they gave up was Marcus Smart and Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, poor Marcus Smart is very unhappy in Memphis, too. Yeah. Not happy at all. And they're playing better. They've won 5 in a row. One of the things we'll have to see about the Kings, and you know how this is, an NBA team, they get in the playoffs, they play together in big games, they have success, and it's like the Spurs used to be, where there's almost like another level of ability that you develop so that in the key situations against the best teams, everybody is able to raise their level play. Because they know we've been through this. We know what you do in this situation. Yeah. You know what I do. We don't know how far along the Kings are. They're playing a team that obviously is very advanced. I know they haven't won a championship, but they've been through. They've been in the finals, the playoffs. So that's where the Kings will be tested, especially against the Celtics tomorrow night. How far along are the Kings in their development towards becoming a really quality NBA team?
So, yeah, and I was just going to ask you, after these three games, will we be able to make some – assumptions about the Kings? Will we learn something about the Kings? Like, does that depend on how they fare in these three games? Or is this part of 3 of 82, that if they go 0-3, it's okay, they'll still be fine? If they go 3-0, are we going to be like, uh-oh, they're title contenders? And then conversely, if they go 0-3, oh man, we can't win.
Well, don't you think Monty is going to be looking at these three games that way, and he's going to, at some point, after these three games, have to draw conclusions that'll determine how ambitious he wants to be?
I think he already knows, though.
Do you?
That's the thing. Yeah, that's my point. I think, you know, we already know who the Kings are, you know? And I don't know if three games in December against these teams are going to, you know, sway Monty one way or the other. Like what I saw from Keegan Murray, if Keegan flames out these next three games, that's not going to change my opinion of him, if you understand me correctly. You know, and if they get blown out, well, we already saw that before. Like, and we already kind of knew this is what we needed to add. You know, now if they win all three, if you're Monty, does that clear up everything? No, I think no matter what, the Kings, they're going to come out of this the same way they went into it in terms of, you know, what do we need? Maybe a wing defender, maybe a backup point guard. Like, I don't think any of those questions are going to be answered over these next three games.
I think you go back to when Pat Riley coached the Lakers, mm-hmm. you know, with Magic. And yep. remember, they played the Celtics in the finals every year. And they were a great team. They won 60 games every year. Pat Riley talked about how there were certain games during the year that were checkpoint games.
Right.
Where when they played Boston twice a year, good opportunities to see, okay, we're a great team. We're Lakers. But where are we right now? And I think these games serve as that for a Kings team that obviously hasn't accomplished anything close to what the Lakers did. So, yeah, Monty has a good idea for what this team can be, but what are they right now? How close are they to realizing that now? I think these three games will go a long ways towards determining what are these Kings right now? How good are the Kings right now?
Yeah, I just disagree because I think – because I'm thinking to myself, if they lose these games, and all of a sudden am I going to be like, uh-oh, we're not ready? I don't think – you know, Monty may be like that. You may be like that. I don't think I'm going to be like that. I mean, because if we're like that, was the win against Denver a checkpoint game? Was the win in Minnesota a checkpoint game? And so are we going to, you know, when they go on the East Coast trip, is that going to be another checkpoint? And so I don't know. I don't think Monty looks at three games and determines, uh-oh, you know, I just don't see that. I don't know.
But I think it's as you and I both said earlier, it's not just if you win. You'd love to win. You don't want to lose.
It's how you play.
But they have to be competitive. Yeah. I think if you get blown out in two of these three games, which I don't expect and it's right. unlikely, then I do think you have to say, all right, we're probably not as far along as we thought we were. It's not like, well, this is it. Disaster. Well, this thing's going down. We got to tear it up. No, but I do think it would give you an indication that, all right, we've still got a little more work to do than we thought. But I don't expect that'll happen.
Do you think it will impact the trade deadline, these three games?
I think it might if some weakness at one position or another is, you know, exposed. And I don't know what that would be. And again, right. I don't anticipate it. But, yeah, I do think that's part of what's going on here. Not just these three games, but this whole homestand.
Yeah, we're going to have Brendan Nunez on, and we'll ask him about that as well. You know, is this a litmus test, a checkpoint? Is this, you know... Well, how much impact will the results of these three games have on the trade deadline?
You don't think so, huh?
That's interesting. Because I think we already know what our shortcomings are, what we need. Like, I think these three games, if it doesn't go the way we want, we'll just shine a brighter light on them and say, yep. But I think he already knows the team's shortcomings and, mm-hmm. you know, its ceiling versus its floor and everything like that. I think in his mind, he already has an idea of what this team needs.
You may be right. The way I see it, for example, we know defensively there have been some questions. There have been some issues, but they're trending in the positive direction. If they defend real well against these three teams, to me, that tells me, all right,
okay.
I think we're good. They can always get better, need to get better. So those are the types of things I'm looking at. If Keegan doesn't show up, again, don't expect that, but then that would be an indication that, all right, you know, he's still not quite there yet. We know what he can do. We mm-hmm. know he's getting there. But it's just a matter of figuring out right now where are the Kings on that arc of competition.
You know, what's crazy, because you brought up the defense. Kings dropped in defensive rating after last night. 17th now. It's crazy how quickly that can change.
It wasn't a great defense.
It wasn't
it
great,
didn't matter.
Right, it wasn't. Yeah. Right, exactly. You know, and so I just thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. We're going to check in with Brendan Nunez.
Yes.
Sacktown Sports Kings insider. See if we can find out why JaVale McGee is not playing. How's Sasha progressing? What stands out to Brendan about the matchup with Boston? And is this a checkpoint game of some magnitude for the Kings? Brendan Nunez joins us next year as a Drive Guys. Do you know if the G-Man played basketball? I have to ask him. I bet he was a smooth point guard if he played. I don't know if he played.
And he might be a long shooter, too, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if he played or not. He seems smooth, though, man, on the court.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Drive guys back with you, Whitey, Kyle Draper, and nice enough to join us, one of our outstanding Kings insiders from SacktownSports.com, Brendan Nunes. Brendan, that was for the most part too easy last night, but at the very end, did you find yourself getting a little concerned with how close the Wizards nearly made it?
Honestly, I was working on some of my post-game stuff looked up and was like, whoa, what's going on here? and Mike Brown obviously highlighted that a little bit post-game and pointed to how Keon Ellis really made his way into the rotation by impressing in, he didn't use the word garbage time minutes, but, you know, that's what it is often referred to as during his time in Houston. And most of the guys that went out there, I think more so got some negative points rather than some positive tallies for themselves there.
Interesting.
Brendan Nunes, our Sacktown Sports 1140 Kings insider. We got to talk about Keegan Murray. And I maintain, Brendan, that the bar has been set, not at 47 points or anything like that, but Keegan has sort of ran through the tape, busted through the door. In a game like last night when he took 17 shots, to me that should be the norm. Do you sense a turning point in Keegan's season after these last couple of games?
I do. I'm with you, Drapes. I hope that that's the case. And to me, it is the shot attempts. Like, it's the aggressiveness, right? Getting up 23 in that game against Utah, where obviously he just went ridiculous en route to 47 points, 12 of 15 from three, just ridiculous numbers, right? So obviously, when you're on fire, it's easier to get up 23. But that's one below his even career high average at Iowa, let alone just in the NBA, you know? So if we're talking about Keegan Murray as a guy that can be a 20 plus point per game scorer, he's got to be able to get him up, you know, and he's always been really good from beyond the arc, but he's scoring more so at the rim and getting shots up in the mid range and looks a little clunky at times, but it's a learning process. It's a growing process, right? This is second year guy and you can see the flashes. So I'm definitely with you. And he said after that Utah game that that did a lot for his confidence on how good he can be offensively in this league. And that needs to carry over. And I think it did, to your point, those 17 attempts that he took last night against Washington.
Brendan, in an almost backwards kind of way, I thought the first half for Keegan last night was an indication of how he's coming along, because it didn't seem like he did anything in the first half. And he had 10 points, you know, earlier this year. For much of the year, he's averaging about 11. So for Keegan to kind of quietly put up 10, I have a feeling he's going to be that kind of scorer where teams are going to think, hey, we did a good job on Keegan Murray. How'd he do? Oh, he had 24. I just think he's going to be that almost stealth kind of scorer because he's so efficient.
I think so, and I think that's also a credit to the pressure that De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis demand out of opposing defenses. You know, they set it up and allow Keegan to be a play finisher, really, rather than a creator. And I think that creation is kind of what we were just talking about that needs to continue to develop, but the play finishing needs to maintain as well. And I think that there's only so many guys you can focus on at once. And De'Aaron and Domas, it's going to be hard for them to not be the one and two. And if Keegan can emerge as that third guy, that it probably will be a little bit more quiet because he's not, more likely than not going to be one or two on opposing scouting reports.
Brendan Nunes joining us. Brendan, what were your thoughts on the Kings coming into this season, and have they changed at all through the first 25 games? I ask this because after these last couple of games, and I know it's against Utah and Washington, I said there's no reason why the Kings can't be a top three, top four team in the Western Conference. Here we are, you know, a third into the season, and they're right there at that point. And so I didn't know if that was capable before the season, so I'm amending my expectations for them. What about you? What did you think beforehand, and what do you think now?
Honestly, I expected a lot of the same from last season. I don't know that that necessarily meant a three seed. I don't think 48 wins typically gets you a three seed in most years, you know. There's some seasons where that's going to happen, but I thought this team was going to have a lot of the same strengths and same weaknesses. And I think that we've seen that defensive progress in some aspects. I like Keegan has been phenomenal. I think Keegan's been their best defender far and away. I think De'Aaron Fox has been a really, really good defender. And I think you've seen progress from Domantas Sabonis. He has his physical limitations as a backline defender, just size-wise, but I think his verticality has been better, and discipline when it comes to fouling has been a big aspect of where I've seen progress there for him. But they definitely still have weaknesses. You know, like Harrison Barnes has his moments of maybe not – he has his weaknesses defensively, even if he also has his strengths there as well. And then Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk, the way that this team plays defense, there's going to be moments where those guys end up as the back line of defense, and you got to be able and willing to take that charge, which I think that Malik took one this year, and that's the first that either one of those guys have taken in a Kings uniform outside of Coach Brown joked last year Malik had one, but really he kind of tripped and then got up and just happened to be in the way and got ran over. So coach didn't really count it, you know? So I still think they have the same shortcomings defensively. Like that game against Washington was really gross, honestly, on both sides of the, from both teams. Like giving up 131 to Washington is far from ideal, even though it felt like they really took control in that third quarter, obviously, where the Kings scored 46 and really put it away. It was great to see them put it away early like they did. But I still do kind of think this team has the same strengths and weaknesses, but I think the big difference is, can Keegan be that third guy, which obviously this last week, week and a half, we're really starting to get that question closer to a yes, I think. And now I think De'Aaron Fox is like flirting with being on MVP ballots. I'm not going to say in the conversation for actual MVP, you know what I mean? Because there's like three, four guys. You talk Giannis, Jokic, Embiid, that like it's De'Aaron's not catching those guys, to be honest.
Yeah.
So like this year, but the way that he's shooting the three ball, the confidence that he has, I think that you have a guy on your team that can be a number one option on a championship team. So those two things are really different to me, but I still think roster construction wise, we're talking about a lot of the same strengths and weaknesses here.
Brendan, where do you think the Kings are? What's your best guess of where they are in terms of a potential deal? We've all heard a lot of names thrown around. I think Kyle and I don't mean to speak for you, Kyle, but I think we agree that some of these big names that are being thrown around are very unlikely to end up coming here. What's your best guess of what the Kings' thinking is right now as far as a potential deal?
Yeah, the LaVine reporting really kind of threw me through a loop, mainly the portion in there. And I love Sam Amick. I think he does good reporting. This isn't me questioning him at all, but more so I was just confused that this is a thought that the Kings feel like their defensive progress, got up to 15th.
Yep.
And now is down to 17th after giving up 131 to Washington, that they feel like that's enough progress that they want to go out and actually focus on getting more offensive players. And that just feels weird to me. That doesn't feel like what Mike Brown has been saying all year long. Mike Brown's been saying, I'm fine with us taking a couple steps backwards if that means we're improving defensively because we need that for the postseason. So that caught me a little bit off guard. But they're going to be – like mentioned with everybody, which I feel like they have been since Monty McNair really took over. I'm paraphrasing the exact wording here, but what they say is, you know, they're going to be aggressive, but patient. And I think that we've seen that and they've proven that throughout the years. So, you know, I think take all these reportings with a grain of salt, like saying that, you know, they prefer Pascal Siakam or they're not really that interested in OG Anunoby. Sure, because you were very interested last year, so you just changed your mind. You know, I'm sure this is all price considered, and these reports come out and are, you know, trying to play leverage a little bit. What good is it for the Kings to come out and say, yeah, we love OG Anunoby and would do anything to get him here?
Right.
Like, Toronto's already going to play hardball like any team in the league would. So I think they're going to be aggressive in searching, but you have to be patient in making sure it's the right guy, specifically if you're talking a Zach LaVine sort of caliber player where you're giving up a handful of picks because you go out there and give all that up, you're really sacrificing your future flexibility. So you better make sure that you get the right guy.
Brendan, do you think they know or do we know what this Kings team needs? Like, is there a consensus? Do we need a top-level guy, or do you need a more rotation player, a bench guy? Like, what are this team's needs right now, in your opinion?
I think a lot of that has to do with how good is Keegan, right? Because I do think this roster construction reminds me a lot of the Denver Nuggets, you know, and I know that's a popular comparison given they're the team that just won the whole thing, but you got a passing big, you got a dynamic point guard, and Sacramento's point guard is better than their center, so vice versa there with Denver. Mm-hmm. And then Keegan and MPJ, I think, are fairly similar, but you look at the two other pieces, a KCP, who's a really good two-way player, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and then they went out and got Aaron Gordon, yeah, who's their defensive stopper, also found his role within this team offensively. And Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes are just not the same caliber as those guys, in my mind. I think that both of those players on Denver are better than any of the individual ones on between Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes. So I think that I don't really know, I guess, to answer your question. And I think there's multiple paths that you could go. You could maybe decide to get a little bit of a tertiary piece. Maybe you're talking like a, do you think Alex Caruso and Dorian Finney-Smith, say you got those two locked in, like all of a sudden, do you feel like you're in championship contention? I don't know. I don't think so. But maybe if Keegan keeps growing and if you have that belief that Keegan can be close to this Chris Middleton that we're kind of talking about. So I think that they have a couple different options. And honestly, right now with the growth of Keegan, it's made me pretty unsure on what I feel like would be the ideal move or where they may be leaning.
For outstanding Kings coverage, I shouldn't have to tell you this, but SackdownSports.com. Brendan Nunes, our Sackdown Sports Kings insider. Thanks, Brendan. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks,
all right. Man. Take it easy, Brendan Nunes. Yeah, it's interesting. He had the same reaction you and I did, Kyle,
yeah,
about the report that the Kings are feeling okay about their defense.
Defense.
Really?
And they give up, you know, $130 to Washington last night.
So. Uh-huh.
I don't know. What do you think? It was last night. That's just, to me, last night was just a glorified pickup game almost.
Oh, yeah.
So it developed into that. And so I'm not going to, even though the defensive numbers slid down, I'm not going to read too much into what took place last night defensively.
The Kings didn't get off to a great start. And then, you know, second half, they pretty much had the game in hand.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. I did not realize that Coach Brown had pointed that out, that, hey, Keon Ellis earned his minutes by playing well at the end of a blowout. So some of these guys had an opportunity last night that they did not make the most of.
They didn't take advantage of. Yeah. And I said it during the broadcast with Katie. I pointed that out. It was Keon Ellis in Houston that earned him some minutes. So I thought those last 3, 4, 5 minutes were important for a guy like Davion or a Chris Duarte or somebody like that to maybe earn back some minutes, and it didn't happen last
night. Don't you think if you're a real fan, and not everybody is, and that's fine, not everybody should be, but if you really are a fan of every player, a blowout at the end, it's like, oh, cool, I get to see these guys that never
played. Yeah, exactly. See what they can do, right? They get a chance. Yeah, no doubt about it. You're right.
All right, well, we'll take a quick timeout when we come back. Ja returns tonight. What that means for the Grizzlies, the West, and the Kings. Drive, guys, rolling on Sacktown Sports. Just getting the vibe from the chat, from some of the calls and the texts. I think tomorrow's game is a big game for Kings fans in terms of how you feel about the team and how good you feel about the future. I mean, just that's a real feather in the cap, beating the Celtics, right? Celtics come in.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about it too. Like, this is not only a game in which you can make a statement to yourself, you could put the rest of the league on notice.
Sure.
You know, De'Aaron Fox balls out tomorrow night, goes for 45 in a win against the Celtics. All those MVP voters and MVP, you know, ladders that's on NBA.com, now they start to take notice, and maybe De'Aaron Fox moves up that. And so, yeah, this is a game where the Kings can make a big statement nationally, you know, put the league on notice tomorrow night.
Going back years and years and years and years, I think it was 1986, which was the year the Celtics was the best team they had with those great teams.
Yeah, 86.
And they came in here in February, and the Kings actually beat them. And Larry Bird missed two clutch free throws at the end of the game.
Really?
Imagine that. And after the game, Larry Bird said, these are the best fans in the NBA.
Bird said that back then?
When Larry Bird said that, you know, Sacramento had only been in the league like 1 year. For him to say that at times, like, boom!
Yeah.
Instant credibility.
Yeah. And we're going to have Cedric Maxwell, Celtics legend, 1981 NBA Finals MVP on our show tomorrow to preview that game. And I'd love to hear some more Larry Bird stories from him. You know, him and Bird bumped heads a little bit there during his time there in Boston.
I know. So, yeah. He's the one that said Kevin Garnett was a better Celtic than Larry Bird.
Oh, my God.
I was interviewing him once, and I said, who said that? And he said, I said that.
I said it. Yeah. Wow. Well, there's a little backstory there, right? A little history between Bird and Cornbread Maxwell. So we'll ask him about that tomorrow.
Yeah, it is special to play the Celtics. But the thing is, anytime it's one of those teams, there's a lot of fans for the other team in the building.
That's going to be that way tomorrow, too.
A little bit, I think it is. Yeah, it's inevitable.
You know, when I used to travel with the Celtics, I thought, man, there's a lot of Celtics fans here. But then, you know, it was like, this is their only trip to Sacramento. So if you're a Boston Celtics fan in Sacramento, this is your only time to see your team. And so you're right. I had to talk to the wife and kids and tell them, hey, we know who signed the paychecks, right? You know, I understand you guys still like Boston, but we ain't wearing no Tatum jerseys tomorrow. Making sure the Draper kids are rocking their Kings jerseys for sure tomorrow.
Yeah, you know what I really realized what that's all about is a few years ago when the Thunder, when they had KD and they had Russ, and they were really good, and they'd been to the finals. And I remember the Kings right around that period, they were terrible. And OKC came in, and there's all these people like cheering for the Thunder and wearing OKC jerseys.
What?
And I was like, what? And I realized, oh, they're on TV all the time, and they always win. So, yeah, if you're on national TV a lot.
You get a lot of fans.
That bandwagon gets full in a hurry.
Well, the worst fan to me is the fan that shows up, and maybe it's just me, that shows up wearing a jersey of a team that's not even playing that night. Like, I go to a Kings game, they're taking on the Wizards, and a guy's rolling around in a Steph Curry jersey. It's like, bro, what are you doing? Like, I don't know. I don't know why that rubs me the wrong way. Am I the only one? Does that bother you at all? I don't know.
It doesn't bother me. I understand how it does bother you. I saw a guy last night, and I don't know. I don't know if this bothered me. I thought, it's curious. He's wearing a Costa Koufos jersey. And I thought.
For what team?
Well, a king.
Like a king?
Yeah.
Might be a long-lost relative or something.
Yeah.
They actually made those? No, that's the ones you had to get custom
made. I don't know what's more curious, buying it at the time when it was new or wearing it now, the other hand, it's like, well, that's obviously a real fan. So.
Well, out of all the jerseys you could wear, right? You know?
You could
Brad Miller, C. Webb. Like, there's so many other big men, you know, Cousins.
Right. It struck me as a little odd. At the same time, I was like, hey, bless you, but I'm not sure I get it.
That's a true fan right there. That's a true fan, man.
Exactly.
Probably listening right now.
Probably, yeah.
On his transistor radio at home? Is that what's happening there?
Bless you, Costa Koufos' biggest fan. Yeah. Tonight, big night in the NBA. Jaws due to come back from his suspension. What do you think this means for the West and for the Kings? Do they care, or are the Grizzlies just so far out of it that that's not even a thought right now?
No, I think the Grizzlies are out of it, but I will say that they could play spoiler or be one of those teams to watch out for. They're not going to make a run for a top four or anything like that, but they could still make the play-in situation. And if I'm correct, the Kings have to face them three times. So Sacramento hasn't played Memphis when the Grizzlies have been down. Like, these first 25 games for them have been abysmal. Like, I got to imagine with Ja back, they're going to be better, more competitive.
Pardon me. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but they've been arguing with each other.
Yeah.
And the coach has been going nuts about the officiating, and they got people hurt. It's been a mess.
It has been a mess. And, you know, Ja hasn't been the only player that they're missing. They've dealt with some serious injuries to some big names on that team. We mentioned Marcus Smart, Steven Adams, you know, before the season, once again, getting hurt. And so
you see you hit a dagger three to beat him this weekend?
My guy,
Dylan Brooks.
That had to hurt. Did you not like that? I love that. I love that. Dylan the villain went back.
I know.
But Dylan the villain went back. And did you see him and Desmond Bane getting into it?
Huh.
Yeah, they got into it, and Desmond Bane got a technical because he was all up in his face chirping, and then Dylan the villain hits the three. I thought that was amazing. I'm a Dylan Brooks guy. But no, back to the Grizzlies, like, they could play spoiler. They're not going to be an easy win. Like, these first 25 games, they were an easy win. Now, if I'm correct, the Kings play them three times, I think, still. And so we got to strap up. I think the first one is New Year's Eve, and so that's going to be a tough one.
I think there's a lot on the line for the NBA in terms of credibility with the Ja situation and with Draymond. And I don't mean to compare them, except that the league is making a very bold stand on both these, and they better end up looking like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think they got the Ja situation correct. You know, I'm not so sure about the Draymond situation. I got to see how it all plays out, how long the suspension is for, how many games he's going to miss. You know, but the thing about it is the league will not be proven that they got it right or wrong until Ja has a clean bill of health, you know.
Oh, yeah, we're not going to, like, know, like, next week.
Right.
Oh, bingo.
We won't know.
They did it.
Exactly.
Yeah, no question.
We really won't know. Now, if Ja goes back out 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks, does the same thing, it's like, darn, 25 wasn't enough. And so I think it's up to the players, man. You know, and for Ja, the proof is going to be in the pudding. You know, he can't let anything like this happen again. You know, first of all, he made Adam Silver look dumb. You know, like anytime you make the commissioner look that bad, he vouches for you. You go through that. I think somebody called it drive-through therapy, you know, 3-day thing or whatever. Come on. And so I think Ja has to keep his nose clean. Same thing with Draymond. You would have thought Draymond would have already learned the lesson, and he still hasn't. So maybe this is the tip of the iceberg where things finally change for him. And we could say the same thing for Ja Morant, too.
Really interesting. You happen to be out sick, but Henry Turner was in one night last week because we were getting ready to do the game night crossover to that, and he was talking about Ja, and he says, based on his experience, he says Ja just has not had the people looking out for him that he needs. And
right.
Henry was talking about how he had that, and you know, he says that's one of the keys. Ja has to either realize he needs to get other people around him, or the people around him have to take better care of him, do a better job of supporting him.
Yeah, the company you keep is so important, you know. I look at a guy like LeBron James, you know, the way he brought up the people around him and his close-knit friends, you know. And then you look at Ja, you know, for some reason wanting to still portray that life or live that life. And to Henry's point, the company you keep tells a lot about you, I think. And so we'll see what happens, man. We'll see if Ja,
I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, exactly. He's a hell of a ball player, man. He was, you know, one of the faces of the league. Like, you know, even my son loves Ja, got the jersey, wants some shoes. Like, you know, he was, you know, a role model to a lot of young kids.
That. Maybe I just want to because he didn't really do anything.
Right.
You know,
right,
he did things like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. But he didn't really commit any crime or anything.
Yeah. No, you're right. And hopefully now he lets his play do all the talking. All that off the court stuff, hopefully we won't see that anymore.
Coming up, Kyle, I don't think you're going to care for this, all right? But, you know, I'm just telling you as your friend. Because coming up, Dante Whitner had some interesting things to say about Brock Purdy. He says, forget Montana. It's time to start comparing Brock Purdy to somebody else.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Jimmy Garoppolo?
No, one of Jimmy's old teammates in New England.
Oh, okay. That guy. Okay.
We'll get to that when we come back here. It's the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.